Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch brings you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE Monday Night Raw.
Well, Bruce, we've got a new number one contender to Bianca Belair's Raw Women's Championship. I want to make sure that we get to that. It's a pretty big deal, pretty big feud with Rhea Ripley winning Fatal 4-Way tonight punching her ticket, as Jimmy Smith said, to Las Vegas and Money in the Bank to wrestle Belair for the title. But because it's such a hot topic coming out of Hell in a Cell last night, let's start the show off with a little Cody Rhodes discussion. He kicked off the show kicked it off after a really well done video package, like detailing what happened at Hell in a Cell, the gravity of it, made it, WWE hyping it as only they can, and really just reminding you what a big deal it was to see him wrestle the way he did with the injury that he had. So I thought that production was great on that. And then you go into his promo, and I thought Cody Rhodes had a good night. I thought the angle with Seth Rollins worked to get to where they needed to go, which was, hey, we got to write Cody off for a while. We'll do a tease where, hey, maybe he's going to try to get back for Money in the Bank. Rollins comes out there, puts extra heat on himself, and essentially, injures Cody further, I suppose, with the via storyline. And so now there's a concrete reason for him to not be around, and Seth has a little bit of the heat back. Cody still looked like $1 million as kind of the lead babyface on Raw. I thought it was a good follow-up given the circumstances of what they needed to accomplish. What did you think?
I thought it was a good night for both men, actually. I'm not the biggest fan of swerves for the sake of swerves, and we'll get to that later. That's another topic from tonight's Raw. But I think what they did here, it made sense that Seth would begrudgingly give Cody his respect and then actually use that as a lure to make Cody suffer at his hands one last time and get the last laugh, even though he didn't win a single match. I joked that maybe 85% of these attacks could be prevented if wrestlers would just stop turning their backs at the entrance to say hi to the fans. But, that's not how wrestling works. So, but you could see it coming as soon as he started turning his back. You knew there was going to be an attack. I was waiting for it to happen, actually in the ring again. I knew something was coming. So it came. It worked to write him off because everything we've heard is that it can't be injured any more than it already is. So if it can't be injured any more, then technically, I don't think Seth Rollins did to it tonight or last night made the recovery time any different. But just going with the story, using the sledgehammer, stomping on it, sure, it's a good way to write him off. I think this might actually work in Cody's favor because even though they're similar in a certain sense, people look at Money in the Bank cash-ins, even if you call your shot beforehand, a little different than they do winning the Royal Rumble. So I think this could be a shot for Cody to be the surprise entrant at number 30 and then challenge Roman Reigns at WrestleMania, because I'm not sure if the Rock thing will work out, but this could be a good way for him to wrap up sort of his comeback story and everything with his dad. And tonight he made it clear it's not just, because we're unified now, it's about the unified titles and not just WWE Championship. So he wants both those straps. So I think it was a good night for both. And I think this is another way for Seth. Seth loses all of his big matches the last several years. It doesn't matter. So it was good.
Yeah. And I think, on one hand, I mean, look, I stipulate what I'm about to say with you never want to see anybody get injured, especially injured as severely as Cody did. I mean, that goes without saying, it affects his livelihood, his family. Like, it just affects so much more than just in-ring storytelling on Monday Night Raw in WWE. However, if you kind of take that part out, like the real life part of it out, just look at it for what it is in WWE. Like, this is, I think there's a silver lining here with Cody in that there's so much top talent that gets overexposed on a regular basis. You know, Seth Rollins being one of those people, Kevin Owens, another one. Like, you know, a lot of the key talent that are tasked right now without Roman Reigns and now without Cody to kind of carry Raw and SmackDown have been on TV week to week to week to week for, you know, 4 or 5 years. And Cody right now, instead of like reaching, because he's very much, I thought, had a lot of momentum since WrestleMania, been booked well, has delivered when he needed to, and he's rolling and he's got momentum behind him. But when you look out and you see, okay, Money in the Bank, SummerSlam, there's a lot of time between like now and, you know, when I thought a potential championship match with Roman Reigns would be on the horizon. And what he avoids here is that overexposure. He's leaving now with people wanting more from him and anticipating to see him again. And so for as hard as it is right now, and I want to make sure we talk about it in a minute, like what losing Cody does for Monday Night Raw, and we'll definitely get into that. And for as tough as that's going to be to navigate, for Cody himself, though, he leaves on his highest note maybe ever in the business in terms of what he did at Hell in a Cell and the feedback that he got from it. And you know, he lines himself up for a really big return and, you know, to potentially make good on the quest for the world title without having all this time go by for him to potentially cool off. So Cody, if you're listening and you haven't thought of this already, there's your silver lining.
Well, you think about his match with his brother a couple of years ago is widely thought of as his best match. His match last night, considering the circumstances, the storytelling of the entire feud, think about your show on the canvas and how you kind of gave that a pretty high grade. I mean, like the kind of macro story and the micro story going into it, it was worthy of a Hell in a Cell match. And the fact that Cody went out there and it was obviously visible to everyone there that he was not 100%. I mean, not even close. And he put on what could be considered his best match to go along with the match against his brother is pretty remarkable. And I think when a lot of people look back at his career, they're going to look at these two matches as not necessarily signal points, but sort of the highlight reel matches or the highlight mm-hmm. matches for them in his career, because of everything that was, it's not like they were the most technically sound matches, but the story evolved for both the psychology, and especially with last night, the injury that played into it. And you add in tonight, the crowd just received him very well and how he was written out going back to the injury. I think this was the best of a terrible scenario that they were able to navigate very well.
Yeah, well said. Well said. What kind of void does Cody's absence leave on Monday Night Raw now in your eyes? I mean, we'll get to the stuff with Edge and the Judgment Day and all that, I'm sure, with our callers a little bit later. But, I watching the show tonight, it was like, okay, there's kind of a noticeable drop. If you take the Cody segment out, you're not going to have like a newsworthy turn like they had tonight with Edge and Finn Balor and whatnot every single week. You know, you're kind of looking around that show going, you know, hey, where's the top guy, the top draw? Bobby Lashley, somebody else who's, you know, could have potentially stepped into that slot and now is going to be working with Austin Theory, presumably. So what do you make of the landscape of Monday Night Raw now that Cody is, you know, going to be on the shelf for a bit?
I mean, I think one of the reasons the Judgment Day is broken up already is they need baby faces, and Edge was not working as a heel as much as he tried. And they know that having these three people turn on him, having anyone turn on anyone is a good way to turn the person who gets turned on face. So Edge, after everything, is just going to be, especially if he gets his old music back and meddling his place, he's definitely going to be received as the face again. So I think that shows exactly what the absence of Cody is going to do on Monday night. And then, you know, you see Bobby Lashley. I was shocked, and you discussed it last night with Greg Parks, but he was really, really, really well received last night in Chicago at Hell in a Cell, which was very surprising considering this feud he had with Omos. It was not very good in terms of, I mean, not so much on his end, but there's just so little that Omos can do, unfortunately, that and Lashley's strong points don't necessarily cover for that outside the ring. So it was a little unfortunate in the build, but people received him very well. And when he grabbed that title, the crowd really, really went wild for him posing with that title again, even though it was a replica. And, you know, I think I've always liked Lashley going back to 2005 or so when he debuted on SmackDown. So to see him finally become WWE champion last year, but now being received as enthusiastically as a babyface, which pretty much everyone, including myself, has said was virtually impossible for him based off his past history. It just, it's nice to see. And he's definitely, if he takes the title from Theory, I think you're going to have someone who is willing to hold that title, kind of not saying the open challenge, but you know, that John Cena had, but sort of in that light of a hardworking babyface who can match up with anybody and is not afraid to take on any challenge and will take on any challenge. And I think it'll help restore a little bit of prestige to that title. And then that'll set Lashley up to be an eventual world title challenger again, whenever that day may come. So they're doing well there. We'll see what happens with Edge. I think he'll be received well as a babyface, but I also think you're asking a lot of someone who was retired for 9 years because of neck injuries and came back 2 years ago and is now in his mid-late 40s. I think you're going to ask a lot if you're going to ask him to be one of your top babyfaces, but he'll be there. I think they could do a lot more with Mustafa Ali, but they obviously don't see what a lot of us see in him, and that's kind of unfortunate because he can definitely be someone who, you know, they have Lashley in that spot now, but he could definitely be someone who is that workhorse champion for the United States Championship. And I just think there's a lot there that they could work with because everyone knows his real-life history, his real-life story, and kind of his more or less his backstage struggles in WWE. So I think they have a huge babyface there that they could work with if they just give him a chance. But they just, over and over again, we've seen that they only see him at a certain limit, which is unfortunate. But yeah, maybe this might be a time they turn to him, but I think more likely they're going to just fill us with more 24/7 segments of that. So.
Oh my gosh. Well, we'll definitely get into that. I want to talk about that, you know, Becky Lynch doing the favors for Dana Brooke. I kid, kind of, but also not really, unfortunately. We'll get to that. We'll talk way more about the turn of the women's division and a lot more, but we'll stop there for a second, set the table for the show, and then start taking calls. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show covering the June 6th, 2022 edition of Monday Night Raw. I'm PW Torch, assistant editor Zach Cadorn, filling in for Wade. Wade will be on the VIP side of things. As I always say, go VIP, pwtorch.com/govip to check out Wade's review of the show and analysis of tonight's show on the Wade Keller Hotline. There's one of those every single day, and a host of other podcasts, an ad-free version of the website, ad-free versions of this show, and a special sale going on right now. So pwtorch.com/govip. If you're on the fence or you're like, should I not? Now's the time. Now's the time. Give us a shot. I think you'll be really, really happy with what you get back for your money. How can I forget? Over 30 years of archives of Torch newsletters also there for you guys to go through as VIP members. So once again, give us a shot, pwtorch.com/govip. The other voice you hear with me today is Bruce Hazelwood from pwtorch.com and PWT Talks NXT. Bruce, it's been a bit, but great to talk to you, my friend.
Thank you for having me back, Zach, and yeah, been a couple months, but we've both been busy, and good to talk to you again. And there was a lot of things on the show that we can discuss. So hopefully the callers have a wider range of topics that they want to discuss.
Yeah, there was a lot on the show to discuss. No question. I'm sure we'll get to it all. 347-215-8558 is the number to reach us at. 347-215-8558. Press 1 if you're listening and want to get on to chat with us. That way I know you want to get on and add you to our switchboard here. If you don't want to talk to us, but you still want to contribute to the show, you can email us, wadekellerpodcast@gmail.com. That's wadekellerpodcast@gmail.com. We will start with callers, Bruce, if you're ready to rock.
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. Let's see. Who's going to kick us off today? 410. Why don't we start with 410? 410, state your name and where you're calling from.
Good evening, gentlemen, Zach, and the legendary Doc Bruce. This is Reverend Keith Bennett from Baltimore. How you doing?
Doing good, Keith. Great, great to hear from you, Reverend Keith, again. What did you think of Raw?
I thought that it was a very good show. I love the creativity. I love the booking decisions. To me, Raw is headed in the right direction. And it was highlighted by three booking decisions that I totally agree with 100%. And they are, as you've already alluded to, the Cody Seth segment, the idea of having the Street Profits as number one contenders without having the Usos getting pinned, and the way in which the angle played out with the Judgment Day turning on their founder. So let me briefly discuss those three points, if you guys don't mind.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. First, in the opening segment, I thought that the way that that angle played out with Seth destroying Cody, taking the humanistic side out of this, okay, I thought it was great. I thought last night would have been the perfect opportunity for the writing team to use Cody's real-life injury as an out. They could have had Cody lose last night, but they didn't. They kept, you know, they kept the original booking decision, which had he been 100%, we all know that Cody was booked to win this match last night, which they kept the same script. But they could have had Seth defeat Cody last night in the cage. You had an out. The whole world could see that Cody was in severe pain. He was injured. He basically was wrestling with one arm. So they decided to go with the other option, which was kicking off tonight's Raw by having Seth swerve Cody, which was excellent, and taking him out, you know, ironically, with the sledgehammer, okay? I thought it was brilliantly crafted, excellently worked, booking 101. Why not put the heat back on Seth? Seth hadn't won a televised match since Royal Rumble, when he won by disqualification over Roman because Roman went berserk. So Seth needed that heel heat back tonight. So I thought that was a great way to send Cody off. Now, I don't think Cody will be back by Money in the Bank because it's at least minimum 3 months. You know, what he had a pectoralis minor strain. So that's 3 months. Now, what Triple H and Cena had, they were major. And even Cena came back after 3.5 months. Triple H came back after 6 months. So Cody's going to be gone at least 3 to 4 months. Now, I thought it was ironic that he mentioned coming back and grabbing that briefcase. But I thought that was brilliant. Yeah, I thought that was brilliantly done. And hats off to the writing team on that. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I agree. I definitely agree. I think, you know, last night, if you kind of treat both as, like, both last night and tonight as, like, one kind of cohesive story, Bruce, because essentially that's what it was. You know, last night, I think is still an epic performance from Cody, you know, if he does the job to Seth and Seth wins, but him having that performance and winning, I think made it that much sweeter. Like, I really think, you know, you got to see him, like, fight and fight and fight and overcome and overcome and overcome and then actually get the job done. And that resonated a lot. I think kind of it lives, like, if the match is going to live, like, in this legendary folklore of Cody Rhodes' career, it it stands there because he won this match. And I think that was very much the right call to fully capitalize on the injury, on the work and the pain that he went in during the match itself. And then tonight, it was pretty simple. You know, you had him kind of tease the crowd with, hey, I'm going to be back. And then Seth strikes. Seth gets his heat back. Cody now can be gone for 3 months. And then and you go from there. So even on this show, I think they made a lot of like some questionable decisions. But the way they executed this from a writing standpoint, Bruce, and just an execution standpoint, I think you got to give them, you know, an A on it. I think it was that efficient.
Yeah. First, good to talk to you, Reverend. I wouldn't go nearly as far to say that I'm a legend. I'm nowhere near, but thank you. Two.
Thank you.
It's weird because even seeing the injury last night, I had no doubt in my mind that Cody was going to lose that match, or Cody was going to win that match, I should say. I figured he was going, because he was scheduled to win beforehand, he was going to win regardless, and then they would write him off either after the match or tonight, which they did. What's surprising to me the most is looking at how he won last night. It wasn't just that he won after overcoming a major amount of damage, taking a buckle bomb through a table in the corner, taking a stomp, you know, all these different things. He won almost as clean as you could. Okay, I had the sledgehammer shot. He had the match won almost as clean as you could get in the Hell in a Cell match. So I feel like they really did a lot to – this was kind of – I think back to WrestleMania 21 when Cena and Batista had their world title moments. And I think, and then beforehand, people kind of forget the match at No Way Out that Cena had with Kurt Angle, where he survived a bunch of ankle locks and then somehow beat Angle to become the number one contender to face JBL. I feel like this is that kind of night for him, the one against Cena, where he overcame all the odds and the injuries. And it's one of those matches that people can look back on to his rise. And I think it's going to be more popularly known now because of when Cena versus Angle happened versus when this happened. But I think it's one of those where people are like, yep, this is that time when we knew Cody Rhodes had it. And it has to be bittersweet for Cody because he gets the injury right at the time when he proved everyone who told him for 20 years, basically, that he couldn't do this, that he's actually right, and he proved them wrong. So, you know, when he comes back, it'll be a really – I believe it'll be – one of the most thunderous welcome backs, especially if he's number 30 at the Royal Rumble, kind of like Cena in 08. I feel like he has that kind of welcoming waiting for him when he does return.
Yeah. I think he does too, and some big business as well. Keith, back to you. Anything else? You said you had a couple other topics for us.
Yes. My second topic was the fact that the Street Profits deserve another opportunity to dethrone the tag champs. Now, will they do it? Probably not. But I love the chemistry between the Profits and the Usos. I also love the fact that, in case any of you guys haven't noticed, Tez has really bulked up. He looks like he's gained at least 10 pounds of muscle. He's even moving around more confidently. He looks great. I think that if the Profits do not capture the tag titles, that he may go on a singles run because it looks like they are preparing him for such. He looks good, and I even like Doc. I like Doc's Tope Suicidas because for a man his size, he can really move, especially when it comes to those acrobatic moves. So that was my second booking decision that I thought they did an excellent job with, the fact that they wrestled for 16 minutes and they protected the Usos by having Jay get counted out. Now, they could have had them get pinned, but why? You want to keep them hot. It's all about the heat. So you kept the heat on the Usos, but you also had – or you crown new number one contenders in the Street Profits. So I think that'll be an extraordinary match at Money in the Bank. Your thoughts?
I think it will too. I mean, those those four guys, I don't think they're capable of having a bad match together. I agree on Montez Ford. He really looks like $1 million. Not that he didn't before, but it's even more kind of prevalent now when you watch him in there. They can pull a singles run out of him and go that route. I think whenever at this point, I don't know how much more seasoning Montez Ford is going to get. So I think, you know, whenever they're ready for that, he's ready. But as far as this match goes, yeah, I the count out finish, it's like, it's one of those moments, Bruce, where if WWE didn't have so many of these kind of, convoluted is the wrong word, but so many of these kind of like escape hatch finishes throughout their, you know, 9 hours of content per week across three different shows and three different days, this type of finish would resonate more because it made sense in this situation. You know, you had the Profits win the match, but they didn't really get the definitive pin. So there's another chapter. That finish made sense. I just wish it wasn't, you know, put in a batch of all the other ones like it that they do throughout the week. This would have resonated more in that case. But yeah, Profits versus Usos, it's going to be a good match. I think it's going to be a good feud. I don't know that you pull the trigger and you put the titles on the Street Profits, but I suppose that's a conversation for another day. Bruce, what did you think?
So first, Montez for bulking up. I just want to mention that Cam made a joke on Twitter that Montez saw all the jokes about can he fight when regarding Bianca Belair and out of that muscle just in case. So there's that.
Wow.
When it comes to the eventual match, I don't think that this is when you have the Usos lose. It would be nice to have the Street Profits regain the titles, but I'm also interested to see one of two things. Either if the Street Profits can go heel, actually play, when I say go heel, can they actually play legitimate heels, or two, how they might separate and go with Montez Ford singles run. You know, I cover NXT, and I've been watching them since they debuted in NXT. And for Angelo Dawkins, that goes back a long time now, if you think about it. Before Montez Ford, he was most well-known for teaming with Ty Dillinger before they both went their separate ways. So just think about how long it's been for Angelo Dawkins. Now, Dawkins used to be the one that people were concerned about if they split Street Profits up. But I think he's actually improved a good bit to at least be a mid-card level heel. I mean, not someone that will sniff a title, but be in those contender matches at least. The one that determined the next title challenger. I think he could be perfect for that, whether it's a heel or a face. But I don't think he can go higher than that necessarily. I mean, maybe he will, but Ford is definitely someone who has all the things we've been saying now since he was in NXT. It's interesting you bring up the singles run because the last couple of weeks on PWT Talks NXT, I've been discussing Carmelo Hayes as this generation's version of Montez Ford. And as in that person where we see all the potential in the world to be a single superstar. And I don't mean superstar in the WWE sense, but a literal actual superstar in the wrestling world because of having everything there. And it's just, you know, people have been wanting the Profits to turn heel for a while. People have been wanting the Profits to break up for a while. People have been wanting Tez to go single for a while, and they just keep refusing. So I don't think they'll win. But if they don't, again, it's either will they stay together, and if they do, I think they have to go heel. Maybe not against the Usos, though, because that'll turn the Usos' face when they're heels right now. I just think what you do with them after Money in the Bank is the real question.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean.
Oh, sorry. Regarding the match, sure, they do a lot of these sorts of small finishes, but you know, count outs are made differently. This isn't one where the heels just left the ring and decided not to pursue the match. This was one where they tried to inflict more damage, and it was believable because they were countered and ended up not being able to make the count because of that. So it was more believable to me, and it was one of the best times to pull a count out decision here because of not wanting either team to necessarily take a loss here. So I think in the micro sense, what they did here was a good job.
Yeah. And I generally don't like, when they have like the challengers beat the champions and then like, okay, then they get there. That's very overdone. But again, in this instance, I think they made it work. I think they made it work. Yeah. And so they're certainly building to a tag title match down the road. Keith, thanks. What's your final topic?
My final topic is the surprise of the night, at least from my vantage point, with Judgment Day turning on their founder. I don't think too many of us, truth be told, saw this coming. I had tweeted that I thought Edge may have reached out to Mustafa Ali, being that he has history with a heel faction, and he also had already posted a cryptic tweet last night saying, I don't know, after he lost in his hometown. But for Finn, who has tremendous history being the leader of the Bullet Club and other factions in his storied career, I thought this was an excellent writing decision. It had a lot of shock value. It was gritty. Granted, I'm sure the reason why this was done was to add another baby face to the good guy side or the face side, being that Cody's out. We all know that. But at the same token, you're taking away a face in Finn and putting him on the heel side. I thought that it was great. I like what they did. It'll be interesting to see how long Edge will be out to sell the concertos. And to put an exclamation point on the Judgment Day's historic night, if you will, they had to have Rhea Ripley win. That's how you book your factions. You have them shine. You have them win. You have them retain their heel heat. I thought tonight's show was excellently put together. Of course, you had some wimpy matches with Dominic and Veer, and then you had Otis and whoever he wrestled, Elias. But other than those two matches, I thought that the show was pretty good. And, you know, feel free to chime in my thoughts. Zach, great job last night with your on-site correspondence work. You heard my comments on Greg's show because I called in to let you know that the Lashley situation with the fan at ringside, him kissing and holding up the replica belt, that was aired, as well as Becky Stoneface. All of that was aired last night. So, guys, I love talking to you. Keep up the good work. Go VIP. Talk to you soon.
Thank you, Reverend Keith. Always good to chat with you as well. Thanks for calling. Yeah, let's break down this this old turn here for Finn Balor and I suppose Edge, because Keith makes a ton of good points. You know, I think it works on a lot of levels, and for me, it didn't work on a lot of levels too. So it's a bit of a mixed bag from a why it worked perspective. I start from the place of I just don't think this had all that much heat as far as Edge was concerned anyway. I don't think from the minute he turned heel on AJ Styles prior to WrestleMania, I just don't think that anyone bought him in this role. And last night at Hell in a Cell, you know, I was in the building and, you know, Edge was in a match and he faded right into the background in the middle of the card during this match. I mean, it was kind of stunning to watch because it's like, hey, you have this guy who has this storied career and then he leaves and then he comes back and to big fanfare and big matches. And now he's doing this. And it was just this bizarre thing. And the crowd wasn't reacting all that much to him. With this turn today, the pro of it, like Keith mentioned, is that Edge is kind of free of that now. And I think that's a good thing for him. I think it allows the fans to do what they want to do in terms of reacting to him, and that's cheer him on. I don't typically like you know, the whole, hey, you're a babyface now because your heel friends turned on you, like like Seth and I suppose like Sasha Banks most recently is an example that sticks in my head. So I don't like that part of it, but given that they needed something, you know, because Cody's gone and they need another babyface on the show, this wasn't working anyway. You know, you kind of add up all the pieces and it made sense from that perspective, I liked that call, even if I didn't like the logic that they took to get here. Bruce, talk about the Edge part of this, and then we'll go to, you know, Finn Balor, Rhea Ripley, Damian Priest here in a minute.
Quickly, the good Reverend said that Otis faced Elias when he actually faced Ezekiel, so I wanted to make
that. Yes.
The Edge
Reverend
part
keeps on the Kevin Owens payroll, I guess.
Exactly. He must have been the one who gave him his information.
Yeah.
The Edge part, yeah, you get another baby face out of it. I know that from all reporting, Edge wanted to go heel and do all this, and this was his idea. He wanted to get his acting chops out there, and sure, maybe the acting has been fine, but it just hasn't been believable, so I guess that doesn't make it good acting. But this, like you, I'm not the biggest fan of I'm a face now because I got turned on by my heel buddies who, because they're heels, I should always anticipate some kind of backstab happening, not just in pro wrestling, but pretty much everything. So that's always a bit of a logic gap you have to kind of navigate when these things happen. But, you know, Edge, it's not just that he went heel, but he went heel when everyone knows his history, his story, his career. And that just makes it a little more, if he had retired as someone who was hated in the kayfabe sense, and he didn't have all those things in the intervening years where, you know, he came off as a really big face, including the podcast, the appearances on the WWE Network with the show and everything. So too hard to break kayfabe here and believe of him as this legitimate heel. So at least this will have him go back to being a babyface. Again, I think there are issues when you want to rely on him as being one of your top babyfaces right now, because it is asking a lot out of him at his age and his injury history. Now, to the macro sense, you talked about the pros. The biggest con to me is, well, there's two cons. One, Finn Balor, since he's come to WWE through NXT and now, his tone, his pitch, his cadence, and his promos, whenever he's talking, regardless of being a face or a heel, is always the same to me. So it's hard for me to differentiate when he's actually doing either. Two, and this is the biggest a con to me, is that comparing Edge to Finn Balor, what has Finn Balor done that makes him a better leader in WWE? Even if you just look at the recent history, what big matches has Finn Balor won? I mean, if you want to just look recently, but it pretty much in his WWE career outside of the first Universal Championship match, there really haven't been many when you just look at Raw and SmackDown. So I think the logic here is really, while artistically it played out well, I think that the logic gap there is a really large one to fill, because in my mind, I'd rather have someone who's a Hall of Famer, a multi-time world champion, a Grand Slam champion, literally done everything versus someone, and still is winning big matches versus someone who, I mean, Edge literally got the finisher and the pin last night. So again, on the person who they turn for. So to me, there is just too much logic there that is being broken for me to really accept this group as better than the Judgment Day. But then again, the Judgment Day wasn't being received well anyway. So this group is really starting, can't go anywhere but up, because any lower is off of TV.
Yeah, I mean, you echoed a lot that I was going to say too in terms of the logic. I think that, you know, if to play devil's advocate, you know, I'm not advocating for this, but they would say, well, you know, Rhea Ripley and Damian Priest just got big heads on the whole thing, you know, and thought, oh hey, you know, we know enough now, so let's go on our own. And it's, and you're really grasping at straws with that, excuse me. But I think you know that's probably somewhat of the case that they're making internally. As far as Finn Balor goes, like, it remains to be seen. He has a storied history, as Reverend Keith brought up, of working heel in Japan. Obviously, it's very different than it is working here in WWE, but there is precedent for him succeeding in that role. If nothing else, like, Finn Balor has been the same old Finn Balor for 5 years now, you know, on the main roster anyway. And so if nothing else, like, this freshens him up. Like, and it might not work, you know, it might not, to your point. Can he pull it off? Does he care enough to pull it off? But there's at least a shot now where, hey, okay, he can, you know, add some adrenaline to his act and try to get a little momentum, because he was so stagnant. And, you know, because of that, you couldn't buy anything that he was doing out there. Like, it was just all kind of happening without a story and without context. And now he's got a renewed direction for audiences to potentially invest in. And I think that potential is better than where he was going in. And Finn Balor is a pretty talented guy. So I think if he gets the time to make this work, and if he's the centerpiece of this new group, I think it has some potential, but it's got a long way to go. Bruce, I wasn't a fan of Damian Priest tonight. I thought he really I don't know. There was something off about just how he spoke. I think, you know, the emotion behind his words, especially during the turn on Edge, like, didn't line up with, you know, his actions. I think he was hitting the wrong inflection points. I just didn't think it was a good night for him on the mic at all. And they got to where they needed to go. But, I think that he missed. I say that, though, to ask you, you know, when you look at now Rhea Ripley, Damian Priest, and Finn Balor, and we'll talk about Rhea in more detail here in a little while, but is Damian Priest the leader of this faction at this point, or is it Finn Balor in your eyes?
I think it's clearly Finn Balor. And to get back to your point real quick about Balor and leading factions, especially with AEW now partnering so closely with New Japan, my question is, how much will WWE actually acknowledge Finn Balor as a great faction leader? Now, there's a difference between saying he's had experience in different promotions doing this and this and this versus actually showing footage or photos of him being a leader of a great faction. So to me, it's going to be a little more difficult unless you're in the know. And a lot of WWE fans only watch WWE, so they might not know about the stuff that happened in New Japan. They might not even know about the stuff he did at NXT, for all that, to be honest. So it's going to be tough to try and bridge that and make him seem like he's someone who's better to be the leader of a faction, since, one, Edge had been in a faction in his early days. But you look at Finn, and he hasn't really been in a faction in WWE. He's kind of been associated with people, but he's never been officially part of any one faction. So it's again, to me, it stretches a little bit of logic too much, but then I'm probably someone who's just overthinking this because I'm looking at it so analytically.
Well, no, I mean, like I said, I mean, Finn Balor, you know, they're not going to talk about his history leading factions, you know, in Bullet Club. I would be shocked if they went there. So it's on them to give him the bandwidth to show that to the current, you know, the current audience that's watching Raw. If they don't, then yeah, they're gonna have a real big problem. If they do, you know, Finn. My point was that Balor has he has those tools to do it. He just has to have the time and the investment to do it. So, yeah, we'll see. Let's get back to some calls here, and then we'll make sure to talk Rhea Ripley in a bit. But I want to grab 443. Been waiting a long time. Thanks for waiting. State your name and where you're calling from.
Kyle from Baltimore. How you doing?
Hey, Kyle. Doing well. Good to hear from you as always, man. What'd you think of Raw?
Yeah, so I'll continue with the discussion about the Judgment Day stuff, and I'll talk more about Rhea Ripley and the whole match. I thought, I had three people who I thought was going to win tonight's match. It was Rhea, Alexa, and I forgot who was in the match. I forgot now. Someone else. I forget now. It was someone else. I think so, maybe. I don't remember. But really, Alexa and I think it was just Alexa and Rhea to win that match. I believe. I think it was in my brain. I thought it was going to win. I think that was it for me. My thing is that people was thinking that it's going to have that SummerSlam. I'm kind of glad it's not, because at least not right now anyway. That could be the second match, because Bianca needs something interesting. It's not going to be Becky Lynch no more, because that was over with. That needed to be something interesting to make Bianca seem interesting, because she has not done anything interesting at all as champion, at least as a character perspective. She's great and gets great reactions, but as a character, she's completely kind of stale to me in terms of her not really being all that, I don't know, she's not all that interesting to me as a character. So with Rhea now number one contender, and knowing how good Rhea and Bianca are, the little times that they faced each other all at the beginning of the year, and now that they have this huge this feud now headed to Money in the Bank, I'm expecting it being a really good feud and make hopefully Bianca more interesting as a character now feuded with Rhea, which will be interesting. So what do you think about that situation?
Great topic. I'm glad you brought it up, because I've been wanting to get to it as I mentioned several times. I like this a lot. I think you could have saved it for SummerSlam for sure, but you know, like the Cody thing changes a lot on this show, just because you know you don't have that single focus on the men's side, and so you may not. Like the WWE may not have the freedom to hold back on, you know, Belair versus Ripley, because they have to get something compelling on television right now. And I think that's what this is. So when we talk about like, hey, who's going to be the face of Raw? Like I would lean right into Bianca Belair and Rhea Ripley on this feud. You have your supporting pieces in place around the show, your Seth Rollins, your Edge, but like the Raw Women's Championship's the only world title on Raw right now. And so I would treat that thing as the most important thing, and I'd treat Bianca Belair as most important star and tell this really good 3-4 week story arc between her and Rhea Ripley. They've got a ton of history there, both in NXT coming up kind of in the same class, and then, you know, on the main roster too. They've shared the ring a couple times. So there's plenty there to go off of. They've got two totally different characters. They mesh well together. Bruce, like, I think you put the rocket on this thing right now. You go into Money in the Bank with it. If you can extend it another, you know, another month and get a rematch out of it at SummerSlam, fine. If you have to pivot, that's fine too. But this works for right now as, you know, the sole world title feud on WWE's flagship show. It's weird to say, but that's the truth.
So I'm about to say isn't to be negative. It's more that I have concerns about the decision tonight, let's put it that way. And I was surprised when Ripley went over. I liked the ending sequence where whenever someone goes for the finisher like that, they start getting elbowed. It usually means you're not going to hit, but I like how Ripley countered the third elbow by ducking right into her riptide and being able to lift Doudrop and pinning her. So that was nice.
Yeah, that was really cool. Yeah.
When you talk about the little things, the artistic stuff, that right there is really a good touch to end the match with. So I liked how that ended. For me, what my concerns are, first is that, well, Money in the Bank isn't, you know, a TLC or Hell in a Cell type of pay-per-view. It's still a step below a SummerSlam and the Royal Rumble, etc. So I thought this was a perfect time to have someone like Doudrop actually be the one to go over without Rhea Ripley being part of the decision, and using that as motivation to make her way toward a SummerSlam match with Bianca Belair. Belair and Doudrop also have a history from last year that they could draw on, and this Doudrop is much different. I noted to myself that when I was still covering Raw up until the end of 2021, Doudrop, her gear was still that blue singlet that she would wear, And what she's wearing now, this is the first Raw I've watched since after Mania fully. So for me, this is kind of my first time seeing her with her upgraded gear. And it looks much more like you would see in a major promotion. It just looks more sleek and more high-end. And so for me, I like this new character presentation of Doudrop. Nikki Ash is a different story. But I thought this was a good time to have Doudrop go over, use a three-week build again to have her just really put it out there, maybe win some matches in between, and come out looking formidable for Bianca Belair. The other concern is that, having Ripley on the back end for SummerSlam. The other concern is that while they do have that history in NXT, again, going back to the thing I said about Balor, is how much are they actually going to reference that history? Because when you look at it, their careers are kind of inverse, where Ripley was NXT Women's Champion. Bianca Belair never won that. While they both have won the title on Raw or SmackDown, it's undoubted that Bianca Belair has had the better career thus far on Raw and SmackDown because of not just the title wins, but the moments, the victories, two straight WrestleManias for her. So their careers are kind of inverse in that way, and they could really play off that. It's just a matter of do they want to, especially because that history of NXT is not what is the current NXT. And so how much of that will they actually draw on? And if they do, will they use that story as a means to kind of re-familiarize and re-educate people just on who these two wrestlers are and their histories together, both in NXT and on Raw and SmackDown?
Good points. Good points. And I think they're valid concerns to be sure. You know, the main roster WWE, they don't go back and like show footage of NXT stuff very often, if ever. So that is a very valid point. You'd have to rely on Belair and Ripley to talk about it in their promos. I think it's the only way you'll get a reference, maybe like in a hype video package of some kind. But I certainly don't think they're going to spend time telling the story of their history outside of this feud. So yeah, I think that's a valid concern to have. And I think it's you're kind of like damned if you do, damned if you don't. Like, you want to save like Ripley and Belair. If you kind of keep Ripley on the trajectory that she's been on the last few weeks or month, that can be a SummerSlam match, a SummerSlam worthy match. But then you have to go, you know, with Doudrop, and all respect to her, she does have a better look, a more kind of like mainstream presentation. I think she looks the part and is kind of finding her role, all the things that you said, but you know, you still then have a situation where Belair post WrestleMania has feuded with Sonya Deville. And you kind of had this thing with Asuka and Becky Lynch out of the blue at Hell in a Cell because Naomi walked out of the company, but that was going to be a match. So two kind of like, you know, B-tier opponents for her. And, you know, so you'd have to have a third
as well,
one.
So.
Say that again?
It wasn't really about Bianca at the end. Bianca was kind of like been the afterthought. She wasn't really the focus, the focal point throughout the entire last few she was part of, especially that last one with Becky and Asuka. She felt she had no business a part of that feud at all. So,
yeah, no, and that's a fair point too. So it's like if you go to the Doudrop route, you get all the things that you just mentioned, Bruce. Of like, hey, you get to get Doudrop elevated a little bit, you hold on the SummerSlam thing. But then if you don't, you know, do you run the risk of Belair cooling off a little bit? Like, does she need a feud right now that's going to, you know, kind of inject some energy into her title reign and Raw in general? They clearly played that card. We'll see. You know, we'll see what they have planned for SummerSlam, because I think that'll ultimately determine kind of the success or failure of this move, because I don't see the feud being a bad one. It's just a matter of should it be now or should it be later. Go ahead.
I guess my question would be that, is Rhea Ripley going to win at Money in the Bank? Yes or no?
I would say no.
I would say yes.
Okay.
I would say.
Oh, well, you would say yes. Okay.
Okay.
I would say
okay.
yes. Because, you know, I think of that because I'm thinking to myself, I view her, because to me, Bianca Belair, even though she has been really good, as she's a great, people like her and people really enjoy her. Ever since she became the Roman champion, even SmackDown was champion last year, she kind of felt like she hasn't really done anything that wowed me as champion, even as a SmackDown was champion. When she was a SmackDown was champion, it felt like it was about Bayley. Bayley kind of carried that feud. And then with the whole Becky Lynch situation, it was like about having Bianca taking the title from Becky at WrestleMania. She did that. Ever since WrestleMania, Bianca's done nothing to make Bianca interesting. It's been about Becky Lynch. It was about her because she's almost because she's a better character than Bianca. It's the character of Bianca that's kind of hurting, because she's always so well liked and that's so well and good, but she doesn't have that fire edge in her with even as a baby face. Like she doesn't have that type of thing that Sasha did, or like now, or that Becky does as a man, or even as his character now. She needs to act be kind of mean, and kind of have an evil streak, but she doesn't have that as a character. She's all smiley. She always comes out there smiling and not really caring about being somewhat serious when she needs to be. And like I said before, for the last few weeks, and ever since WrestleMania, she's been a complete afterthought in my opinion, because she hasn't said anything when she was feuding with Becky and Asuka. She cut no promo about anything. So this could be a chance for Bianca to hopefully do something interesting. But at the end of the day, I just have a feeling that they'll give the title to Rhea right now, because Rhea is the one they have been pushing hard within this group more than Bianca as a character perspective. So that's even more why I think that Rhea may take the title off of Bianca at Money in the Bank right now, because as of right now, again, as a character, Bianca Belair has done nothing in my eyes that screams she's a top star as a character. So that's my thing about this entire thing with Bianca for the last few months anyway.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, go ahead, Bruce. Yep.
So if she wins, then what I'm going to say here doesn't really matter. But if she loses, then this new group that was just formed really lacks a bit of oomph if they left a group that they were winning in to then – they just won last night, after all – to then lose their next big match. So for me, that's another concern. And again, these are just concerns. And I've been proven wrong many times, and I've probably proven wrong here again too, and that's fine. It's just that this new group, I think, needs as many wins as possible, but I just don't think she's the one to beat Bianca Belair right now. I understand Kyle's concerns too. I've been talking about Cameron Grimes on NXT and how he seems like someone who is – he's much more – I find more investment in his character when he's chasing titles than when he's a title holder. And for Kyle, maybe Bianca Belair is one of those people. He kind of reminds me of Sami Zayn in NXT. He's always someone that you got behind on the chase. He didn't really have, you know, the big title run that we could really get behind after that, but he was one of those where it was all about the chase. And maybe with Belair, it's better with the chase for certain people. And that's fine too. For me,
yeah.
Again, go ahead, Zach.
I was going to jump in there. Yeah, I mean, I think I'm considerably higher on Belair right now than both of you guys seem to be. I mean,
I'm just talking about Kyle's concern and trying to contextualize it. I'm a big
fan. Oh, got it. Okay.
So I think her as champion is fine. So.
Well, I do
no,
too,
no,
but
okay.
it's just for me as a character, at least for the past, really ever since WrestleMania, she's just been. I personally haven't seen anything to me as a character that she's been somewhat interesting to make me get more invested in her. And I can't just base off because people like her. That's all well and good. But with her character herself, what she's doing in the ring and on the microphone, she's as of late anyway, has done nothing interesting to me because of that. So that's how I view it every single week with me out to my fear.
Hey, you're allowed, Kyle, for no doubt. I mean, if you're just judging it by, hey, character, yeah, like I think your points stand. I mean, you haven't seen like a ton of development from her. When I'm judging her, I'm looking at the, you know, the star power. Like, does she come across as a star in her feuds, whether it's Sonya Deville or Rhea Ripley or, you know, whoever it is. And I think she passes that test. But to your point about the character development, yeah, that we haven't seen a ton of that. This feud with Rhea Ripley may bring it out, you know, or at least she's got a credible opponent to work with, where I think you could genuinely say to yourself, like, hey, her title is in jeopardy here. You know, like, you knew that she was going to beat Sonya Deville. You pretty much knew she was going to win at Hell in a Cell last night, just given the circumstances of how they got to the match. Like, I don't, you know, just, you know, yes, the match did a nice job of convincing you otherwise, but the storyline, from a storyline perspective, you know, she was, you know, always, I think, going to win that match. And now she's got something that she can maybe sink her teeth into a little bit. So it remains to be seen, but I like the choice so far. And, you know, if Belair is working at the lower part of the card at SummerSlam, Bruce, you know, you're going to have to call me out on that for sure. But we'll have to see. Kyle, anything else for us tonight? Any other topics that you want to get to? Great discussion,
yeah,
guys, on the women's division on Raw. Good stuff.
Yeah. I just had that major thought, and I'm just happy that they're doing it now, not waiting for another month for SummerSlam, even though whatever, they'll get to it. I'm pretty sure this is going to be continuing from SummerSlam anyway, so we'll see. So my next thing is about, you know, again, with Cody Rhodes, and I guess also with Roman Reigns, it seems to me that, well, obviously it's kind of been a lie, they were hype enough to put Cody Rhodes to be in this position to be this top star on Monday Night Raw. And all of a sudden, what happened last night with him at Hell in a Cell with that major injury, it was really hard for me to watch that match because I was really distracted looking at his shoulder and how worse it gotten within the match. I don't know if you noticed that within the match, it got even worse within the match. It kept was continuing. And so I really thought that he was going to bleed out, honestly, throughout that match, which was kind of like, it was really uncomfortable watching that match. But so I guess my theme is that since they pour all their eggs in the Cody Rhodes basket, and the fact that they don't want to have Roman Reigns on Monday Night Raw at all to have him, he is a double champion, he's not on both shows. Like, why could Becky Lynch go to both shows? It lasted a month, but she went to both shows. I enjoyed that. People didn't like that because of the fact that she was overexposed, but I see there being overexposed and not at the show at all. I think that's even worse than being overexposed. So now that he's gone, they need to make some sort of, and I mentioned this for the last few weeks to Wade about what I may call that about Roman Reigns. They need Adam Pearce to make some type of an announcement about the WWE Championship and have it back on Raw even more now, and whether that's putting Seth Rollins, which they should have done back at the Royal Rumble, and because they need a major, I don't know who that top guy is going to be now. That if it's going to be Edge now as a top babyface, guess that's why they did what they did. I also makes me think, had Cody Rhodes ever gotten injured, would they ever done this angle with Edge? Probably not. So probably they did a top act who can play both heel and babyface, and Edge does that. So what do you think about that whole situation and where to go involving the WWE Championship aspect and Roman Reigns and how they're going to address him, his title run, if he's not going to be on Raw, which he needs to be?
Yeah, I mean, my gut, Kyle, is that you know, not to be the bearer of bad news, but I don't think you're going to get your wish on that. I mean, I think they've got Roman Reigns plans for SummerSlam, and then after that, of course. But until then, I just don't think we're gonna see him and get that closure. Unfortunately, on some levels, like I think that you unified the titles and they did not get as much as they could out of that. Because Roman renegotiated his contract and got a likely a really good deal. But with that said, Vince McMahon's in the Roman Reigns business, right? We've all know that. And I think that, they're just going to treat him like Brock Lesnar. And he's the champion. He's not around. And he's not around all the time. And that's what we're seeing here. And I think, the idea was, okay, let's put some other pieces into place to accommodate for that. And the timing with Cody worked out perfectly to coincide with that. And then this injury happened, and now they're kind of like, okay, what do we do? And Edge, I think, is a result of the situation with Cody Rhodes. John Cena, I think, is a result of the situation with Cody Rhodes. Yes, it's his 20th anniversary, but who knows what kind of deal they have now. Like going into the summer, maybe they get Cena to work SummerSlam now. I mean, he's going to be returning on June 27th to Monday Night Raw to kind of celebrate 20 years. Like who knows what kind of angle they shoot there, but he could be somebody that fills that gap until SummerSlam when you start getting Reigns back. So, like, they have to scramble right now, and I think they need to lean on the women's division for sure on Raw, with Bianca Belair to help kind of, like, cushion that blow. But they are scrambling. They lost a big player. Like, WWE likes their top people, and that they focus on that. So when one of those guys or women goes away, like, they are sent scrambling, and I think that's, what we saw here with Edge and Cena. And I think the kind of the hurry up on Ripley versus Belair too. I think all of those things can be kind of anchored back to, hey, like our big plan for the summer on Raw is not going to happen anymore. So what are we going to do? Bruce, is that accurate or am I, living in La La Land?
Well, real quickly on Kyle's concerns about Belair, I do think are the character concerns I should say about Belair. I do think there's some blame to be had on the writers for making all of her title feuds since Mania not about her and the championship, but about the people challenging her for the championship. There's supposed to be a balance, and there hasn't been a balance there at all. So I don't think we should be too harsh on Belair here in this case, because literally every feud she's had since WrestleMania has been more about her challengers and how her challengers have come about their title shots than about her being the champion and someone challenging for her or her title because she's the champion, So I think there's a balance that needs to be struck there that hasn't been struck. Cena could be the person that does help bridge that gap until Cody returns. But then, is Cena's contract going to be something where he wrestles only one match a month? Is it enough that Cena does three promos a month and then one match a month for the fans to really retain and keep their interest? Or is he going to sign a contract where he's actually going to be wrestling every week or every other week for 3, 6, 9 months? That's really going to be the case here. And again, you're going to be relying on Edge in his 40s, Cena in his 40s, to be two of your top three baby faces at this point, with Bobby Lashley on being probably number one. That's a lot to ask. And Lashley also is in his mid-40s. So you're asking three people in their mid-40s, and that's not to denigrate them for being in their 40s. It's just that these men have more than 20 years or so of bumps and travels and all these other things on their bodies and might not be able – I mean, Lashley has been a workhorse, but can Cena and Edge still do it week in and week out? I'm not sure. Cena hasn't been wrestling every week and Edge has been around every week, but not necessarily wrestling every week. So it's a lot to ask, but – if anyone can do it in the last 15 years, that the one person that has been able to do these things is John Cena. So will he be shot directly into a main event feud, or is he going to come in and work more with people like Finn Balor or Damian Priest? That's also going to be the question with John Cena, because they didn't really make it clear as to what his return is going to entail. So there's some mystery there, at least leaving there for us to discuss and rumor monger about.
Yeah, no, for yeah, sure. Yeah. You know, I mean, I think they were facetious on purpose, because they might even not know yet. You know, all this stuff with Cody's pretty darn new. But we'll see. But Kyle, they're scrambling for sure.
Yeah.
Final topics, man?
Yeah, I'll finish with this. I just also thought too is that you see who's on the Raw right now. Who's kind of in on the rise with Austin Theory, and you have Finn Balor, Damian Priest, and you know, but all of them pretty much are heels, and you know they're kind of. I think about Theory, he's young, but he's also you know, the champion. I don't see if he's going to be the WWE champion this early. And within his age right now being, and also he's a heel. Mostly the people who are there are who are credible opponents, who are credible champions, are in their 40s within Lashley and with and whoever else is, who's on Raw, who's seen as a top star, but they're older, and so they just got for them to rely on them as you have to rely on a heel, which. I think of Seth Rollins right off the bat because maybe they'll just have to turn Seth Rollins babyface, which that'll probably be the end result, and just have him be the babyface Seth Rollins is the only guy to me that I could see could carry Raw. He did it before. I could see him doing it again. So maybe at the end of the day, they'll just turn Rollins babyface, and he'll be the person that they'll rely on for the next few months or the year on as a baby face, but I'll leave it with that. But they short call.
Yeah, Kyle, thanks so much for making it, man. Good, great, great topics. Good discussion. Really appreciate it. Call again soon. Yeah. We'll keep the callers going here. Bruce, 814, you are up. Thanks for holding. State your name and where you're calling from tonight.
This is Ryan from Cumberland, Maryland.
Ryan, a pleasure. Pleasure as always. You got three topics for us tonight. What's your first one, man?
My first question is on Austin Theory. Do you see him being the guy that feuds with John Cena since it's so high on him? He seems to be getting a pretty decent push now.
I do. Very much so, actually. You know, they've teased it a couple times. Theory and Cena have both kind of talked about one another independently of like any kind of, you know, angle or any kind of WWE connectivity. Theory is, I said this last night on the post show with Greg, like Theory is a part of WWE's long-term plans at this point, by all accounts. Like I don't think Vince McMahon is going to put, you know, his eggs into a basket that he doesn't believe in, at least at this point. And so I think Theory is, he's a young guy. He's got a good look. He can wrestle well in the ring. He has charisma. They're still missing pieces for sure. Like he's got to get over, you know, the comedy selfie thing and develop a little more aggression and a little more, you know, be a little bit more credible as a heel. But I think that's, you start to see that already develop a little bit with him, just in the way he talks and the way he carries himself. But Bruce, the bottom line is he is Vince McMahon's guy. So he's going to get every opportunity to succeed. And a match with John Cena is a, you know, that's a bright light for him. And you know, it makes perfect sense if Cena's available.
Issues outside of the ring aside, you know, Theory definitely is someone that you can see why they're so high on him. A lot of people have analogized him to a young John Cena, and while I do see the comparisons as two young, muscular, you know, at the time, Cena was one of the more good-looking guys. He's kind of maintained the same face, but age hasn't been the best on him. But I think Theory by far is better in the ring in terms of the technical stuff and what he can do than Cena. But Cena did improve throughout the years by adding little things here and there. With Theory, I think one of the reasons Cena is coming back is to give Theory the John Cena rub. I think Theory is going to end up having what I think is going to happen is Lashley is going to become United States champion. after that, Theory is going to target John Cena as sort of his way to have a proverbial championship by taking out who many consider to be the greatest of all time. Those people who consider him to be the greatest of all time are probably only born in the last 20 years. Now, when it comes to how they get there, I think Theory can conceivably talk John Cena, and Cena can conceivably talk back to Theory into a match with each other by pushing each other's buttons. And if anyone can make Theory's smarmy, arrogant, preppy boy character and promos seem just as how do I put this? If anyone can make Theory look bad on the mic without him being bad on the mic as the goal, it's Cena, and those kind of promos I think will work. So I think eventually, maybe SummerSlam, maybe later, he's going to have that big pay-per-view match with Cena, and he's going to be the one that gets the victory. I think that's what they have to do if Cena's coming back. You can't have the equity of Cena wasted on beating your people that you are setting up to be the future champions, the future stars, the future people that carry your shows for the next 5 to 10 years. And real quickly back to what Kyle was concerned about, there have been times in pro wrestling history and WWE history where heels, top of the card heels, have been the promotion drivers. I mean, look at Roman Reigns right now. So I don't think necessarily you have to have a babyface as the main character, the top person on your shows. It does make it tough, though, if for your two main shows, both are heels.
Yeah, for sure. It'll be an interesting ride. I mean, because yes, also you shrewdly mentioned that there is, you know, issues out of the ring that surround Theory that can't go completely overlooked. And all those things will factor into the kind of push that he gets. But right now, Ryan, I think he's going to get the good treatment until he doesn't. What's your second question?
Second question is on Ezekiel and Elias. And that is, Ezekiel wrestles a lot more like Paul Roma, and Elias wrestled more like Baron Corbin. So my question is, like, do you have any wrestler that's transformed their style? Much like, I know Kama and Papa Shango is the only one that really comes to mind where they tried to make it, you know, not quite so obvious it was the same person playing the role. Like, do you think he was, like, down in the performance center learning how to wrestle this way? Because I think he even wrestled in the local indies where I'm from, and I don't remember ever him, like, being, like, full of energy, you know, and doing, like, crucifix like he won tonight with. So that's my question for you.
Yeah. But Bruce, what do you think?
I can't think of too many examples in that regard, but I can't think of examples of people who, based off being face or heel, will change their style a little bit. You know, Randy Orton would do this a lot in the aughts, especially in his younger days. When he first joined Evolution, his style was completely different from when he had been a babyface beforehand, and throughout the years he would do that a lot. Edge is someone who did that. I think Christian is someone who also did that. So for me, it's more the people that would do it based off of their disposition, their character disposition.
Yeah, I think that's well said. In this instance, I don't think it's a bad thing to try to do, especially in this with this storyline where, he's not Elias, right, in story. So why not, try to go full on with that and have a different ring style? So I think it works. While we're talking about it, The angle tonight, Bruce, out of the gate, I have not liked what they've done here. I think it's laughable that Kevin Owens goes from main event segment at WrestleMania with Steve Austin to Ezekiel and Elias. Like, there's just something fundamentally wrong with that path. But with that said, like, it's, for what it is, I guess it's working, even though I don't like it. Like, I don't know what the end game is. I don't know, I don't know how you put a bow on this. But, Kevin Owens is kind of putting it all on his shoulders to get over. And it's for a low card thing, I think it's probably in the category of quote unquote over. But it's certainly not anything that's going to draw viewers. It's not anything that's going to draw money. So we're getting a rematch next week, though. Like, what's this doing for you right now? In addition to, you know, anything that you want to add about kind of his transition in the ring.
What it's doing for me is just reiterating how generational of a talent Kevin Owens really is compared to a lot of other people. Because, and you look at his best friend Sami Zayn over on SmackDown, those two make really any angle they're in work. You think about probably the only other person in WWE who could have made the whole Johnny Knoxville angle and match work would have been Kevin Owens. So you look at what these two are doing, and they're just so great at understanding the psychology of their characters. Tonight when Kevin Owens reacted like he had won the World Series because he got Ezekiel to say that my name is Elias, I mean, that is the reaction you've seen and I've had of people who are like, I knew it, I told you. But I did note that Ezekiel slyly said, my name is Elias. He never said, I am Elias. So right then and there was the cue that, of course, he was lying. But he did it all to make – and, of course, he made sure that Owens agreed to the match before he revealed his lie. So I think in the micro context, this little angle worked because it was a bit hilarious, and seeing Kevin Owens do his thing was good. And Ezekiel, as my colleagues at Daily DDT put it, he was a smart babyface. You don't really see that very often in WWE. So kudos there. The angle, though, overall is – when I first saw Ezekiel come on the screen the night after WrestleMania, after night two, I should say, my first thought was, oh, Ezekiel Jackson back. No, it was a clean-shaven Elias. And so there's never really been – the whole hook with Elias is he really Ezekiel? Or with Ezekiel, is he really Elias? There's never really been anything – people always go back to Stone Cold asking, who is Seth Rollins? There's never really been anything about who the hell is Ezekiel, aside from he might be Elias, he might not be, is he really his twin brother? There has to be more to your character than that. And the fact that Kevin Owens has made this months-long angle work just off the fact that the only thing we know about Ezekiel is he looks like Elias – that is a testament to his talent. So kudos to Kevin Owens. I hope after next week we're done, but I don't. It's been going on for months, and I don't think it's going to end anytime soon because there's no indication that we're actually going to get a resolution to the whole Ezekiel issue.
Well said. Well said. I can't add too much more to that. Kyle, what's your third question for us tonight?
Well, actually, it's Ryan.
Kyle, geez, Ryan, question. Yes. Sorry.
Final question is on, I've noticed this, like, I don't know if you noticed it on the Bobby Lashley, Austin Theory promo, like, the video sort of froze up a little bit, at least on my end. So, I know Tim Walbert left WWE a few years ago and went to AEW. He actually just lived a few miles down the road from me. And he's been with the company since, like, 1985, 1986, wondering if, like, these video airs, it seems like it happens almost weekly. I don't remember that happening years ago. Does that have to do with Tim Walbert leaving? Because I know he was, like, one of the head people in WWE that did the video production for them.
Could be. I mean, I don't know that you can – I wouldn't – well, first of all, I don't know. So I don't know the answer right out of the gate. But my gut tells me that it's likely not just one person. I mean, certainly, you know – He had the history with the company and knows the drill. But, you know, WWE is a billion-dollar company. They got a lot of good people working backstage. So I don't know that you can shoulder the entire thing on him. But he certainly is a valuable piece that I think would take him out. He's a hard guy to replace because he's seen so much. But I guess, Bruce, I just chalk it up to, like, yeah, just regular production errors that they got to clean up.
Yeah, it's interesting he brings this up because for a few weeks I was having issues with the USA streaming player with NXT. Always, every commercial break I had to reload it. But the last week it was fine, and I didn't have any issues with the USA player tonight. So maybe it just really depends on how much bandwidth the local network is taking up and if that's causing any issues. I really don't know.
Yeah, that's a good point too. Actually, a good, real good point that could be a thing. Either way, Brian, I mean, look, this is they're a national television show in prime time. you really can't have those things going on. I mean, you gotta gotta button up for sure. Brian, thank you as always.
Thanks for taking the call.
Yeah, thanks for making it, man. Always good to talk to you. Bruce, we'll get some emails here. We will wrap up the caller portion of the show right there. But I want to get to some emails. But before we do that, man, you and the NXT team have been doing some really great work covering NXT 2.0 on a weekly basis, in your house, over the weekend. Just talk about your show. Talk about the NXT coverage, where people can find more of it. The floor is yours, my friend.
Sure. Thank you, Zach. So every Tuesday – I am one of the three members that covers NXT 2.0, along with Nate Lindberg and Kelly Wells. Kelly Wells and I rotate the live report. The last couple of weeks I've been doing it because Kelly has been doing parental things, which are far more important than covering the show. So good for Kelly there. And so Tuesday, tomorrow night, he will be doing it. On this past Saturday, I actually did the live report for In Your House. So if you missed the show and want to go back and see kind of what happened, read about what happened, my report is there for you to look at. For VIP members, we also did a VIP roundtable, which included Sean from MMATorch.com. So that's there for VIP listeners to listen to. Every Tuesday night after NXT goes off the air, we do this. We do a post-show called PWT Talks NXT, Nate Lindberg, Kelly Wells, and myself. You can call in. It's a different line than this. It's the same line as Wrestling Night in America. And email any questions to pwtorchnxt@gmail.com.
Awesome. Awesome. And where can people follow you on social media?
You can follow me on Twitter at b_lee253.
Very good. And Bruce, you're a great follow, so everybody do that.
Thank you.
We'll go to the emails. We'll start with Zach in Texas. And he brings – I can't believe we've gone through the whole show and have not talked about this yet in detail. But he says, gentlemen, I had an entirely different email planned – but that went out the window the minute I saw that Becky Lynch was going to slum it and challenge for the 24/7 title. There is no justifiable reason Becky Lynch should be challenging for the 24/7 championship. None. Zero. There are a million different ways to advance your feud with Asuka besides the 24/7 title match, and she sure as hell shouldn't be losing to Dana Brooke under any circumstances. All caps. She has a long list of accolades. She's the GOAT, for crying out loud. She shouldn't be within 500 feet of that farcical championship. It's absolute disrespect. What the hell are we doing here, Vincent, Zach, in Texas? We haven't talked about this yet. I don't know that it needs, you know, 30 minutes of discussion. But, Bruce, I don't know about you, but I'm with Zach on this one. I can't believe that you had Becky Lynch out there for 24/7 stuff. Like, it's just that that stuff almost lives in a different kind of ecosystem under the WWE banner, as far as I'm concerned. And, you know, look, I get the point of it here, you know, to have Asuka cost her a match. They're showing Becky Lynch like in this downward, never ending downward spiral. This is another chapter in that, but at some point you got to draw the line in the sand and go, look, this is one of the top stars in the company, period. You know, is Roman Reigns going to be doing something like that? Like, no. Would Steve Austin have done something like that back in his day? Absolutely not. So I just, you know, it's not that this is not cohesive with the story that they're telling. It is, if you kind of break it down. But she is too big of a star to be around that division. She's too big of a star to be losing to Dana Brooke, period. I'm with Zach on this. What say you?
So I'm going to play devil's advocate here slightly, with the full recognition that what I'm going to say as a devil's advocate is wiped out by how the match actually played out. I'm going to be forthright there. So devil's advocate, I think character-wise, if you look at how crazed and panicked she was, I think it made sense for her character to see the first title that appeared before her and want it because she finds worth in holding titles. And with her slow deterioration since losing the title, now seemingly even more evolved than it had been in the past, I think to a certain extent you could make it make sense that she would want just a title because that's where she finds her worth basically in life, if you go on the kayfabe way. The other part of the devil's advocate here is I thought that, oh, maybe they'll do the Hurricane and the Rock spot here. And they kind of did, but there was no follow-up. So the second part is, and the second part here only works as a follow-up if the first part, for the first part, is she had to win the match for that actually to matter then. And because she didn't, go into what you two were talking about, it makes it seem just that much of a very, very bad booking decision because, yes, she was distracted, but it's also against someone who didn't even get an entrance tonight. She was already in the ring and introduced during Becky Lynch's entrance. So there's just a lot of things here that were there also didn't need to be a need for Becky Lynch to have a match tonight. She could have just given her promo and that'd be fine. There didn't have to be any of this that happened. Since it did, what they could have done is have her emphatically go over and hold a title and people just be so scared of her as a 24/7 title that they don't want to approach her and eventually have a unification. No, that wouldn't work because women's title should be unified with that. But still, like, it would be a way to sort of get the 24/7 title on TV without having all the shenanigans. But because it didn't go that route, then having her in this match to begin with is just completely delusional, I guess.
Yeah, no, well said. I think your devil's advocate points work. I mean, they make sense. It's just, where are they going with her, Bruce? Like, are you like, to me, I think you are seeing a long-term arc here of kind of like, you know, Becky Lynch, like, just I'm having hard times, you know what I mean? And the question that I have about this is like, I think it's a fine heel story right now, tonight aside, and Asuka is a serviceable opponent for her. But, you know, when you look into the future and you look at, you know, Ronda Rousey down the road, for example, like the redemption of Becky Lynch and her climb back to the top, maybe for a match against Ronda, like that's a babyface storyline. And so, and so when you look at like, okay, now we're seeing the downfall, you know, I don't get the sense that if they play the other side of that out and go, all right, well, now we're going to tell the story of, you know, Becky's comeback, so to speak. They can't do that with her as a heel. So, you know, is this a short-lived deal or do you think they're just going to take it in a completely different direction entirely?
I think they should do what you're talking about in terms of making this a rock bottom story, not to infringe on the Rock here, but making that a rock bottom story for having her make a build back. So going back to NXT here, Wesley became a singles wrestler because Nash Carter was released after a bunch of out of the ring stuff. When they were a tag team, even though they were billed as faces, there were a lot of people who found their act annoying. What Wesley has done since then is talk about what it's like to be at the bottom and knows that saying that he knows he has challenges ahead. He knows he's going to fail a lot, but he's going to keep working and find out, you know, who he truly is. And he's been working at that and he's becoming more endearing week in and week out. There is a way to do that here with Becky Lynch, where she's just gone to the bottom. You have her film some kind of promo. Could be in the back where she's just brooding. It could be somewhere else. And she just says, you know what? Things haven't been working. I thought it was all about this and that. Even after having my child, I thought what I needed to do was always be this and that so that I could always prepare a future for her. Well, I've realized yada yada. There's a way to make a babyface promo out of that and have her do a successful face turn because, one, the fans love her anyway, and they really just boo her out of begrudging respect for how well she plays her character. So I think if that's the route they go, we'll look back on this as, okay, they knew what they were doing. But if that's not what they do, and it kind of just goes back to business as usual, then this is going to be looked at as one of those, it might be one of those end of the year awards for a stupidest booking decision of the year.
Yeah. Yep. Well said. All right. Let's go to our final email of the night, and then we'll put a bow on things. We'll put a bow on things there. Actually, I have one other question for you, but we'll hit this email first. From JB from Detroit. Point number one, Becky should be nowhere near the 24/7 division in any capacity ever. I think, JB, we both agree with you on that, but point taken. And then point number two, do you think they might be using Finn Balor as the leader of Judgment Day to elevate him to a main event position, or will him and Priest be more like a tag team? We touched on this a little bit, but we can go a little bit deeper here. Like, Damian Priest is not ready to lead a faction. I just don't think his presence is strong enough yet. I don't think his character is defined enough yet. I don't think he's strong enough on the mic to carry, you know, faction segments that that require, you know, smooth talking and just, you know, confident on the microphone. He's still very much finding that. I think Finn Balor, like, throughout his career has had more time to develop those skills, and they're there, but nobody's seen that really on the main roster, like you pointed out earlier in the show. So it remains to be seen with him too. But Bruce, if I'm looking at either or, like, I'm going with Finn Balor on this. Like, I just think he just has more confidence and more of a presence at this point, albeit a little bit of a shadow cast over it because of how he's just been booked the last 2-3 years in the company. But Damian Priest is the other option. Doesn't work well for me either.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if I had to pick between the two, I would pick Balor as well. But I also don't think that he's necessarily going to be your top 3, 4, 5 act, because if they wanted that to happen, they would have already done that the past 2, 3, 4, 5 years that he's been there.
Mm-hmm.
And they haven't done that yet. So that leads me to believe that they're more so going to be a – this is why I was concerned about Rhea Ripley right now, because I feel like this faction needs to have those victories. I feel like they're just more going to be that heel faction that is sort of a mid-upper card gatekeeper, where they're going to win matches against people they should win against, but they're going to lose matches that are always about contendership or for titles or whatnot. And to me, sure, you're going to be on TV and all that, but I'm not as enthused about this faction forming. Even though Judgment Day wasn't doing much, at least Edge was there as an anchor. I'm just not as enthused with these three, with Finn Balor replacing Edge, because I just don't think that, again, if they believe in him as a top-tier act, they would have already done that with him, and they haven't. And so, yeah, I'm just concerned about where they go from here, because while, again, the Judgment Day wasn't getting much reaction aside from go away heat and the what chance really need to stop in all wrestling circles. But again, Edge at least brought some legitimacy, and I'm not sure if that legitimacy is still there when it's Balor, Priest, and Ripley.
They need a good promo on next week.
Mm-hmm.
They really, I think, need a good promo to tell that story. You know, I think they need the attention to detail for that promo that Cody and Seth got tonight, you know. And I think if you can land the plane on it, okay, maybe you got something. And again, it remains to be seen. But next week's a big moment for them. I mean, you got Ripley. She's got a lot to talk about. The faction has a lot to talk about. So, you know, they just they got to hit a home run with it next week. Stakes are pretty high. Real quick, Bruce, Riddle tonight. I want to talk about him a bit. He, kind of was the quote-unquote guest on Miz TV, even though Miz yelled at him for being out there, kind of confusing. But nonetheless, you saw a bit of you saw goofy Riddle for sure, and then you saw a little bit of a edgy Riddle in telling Miz to quote-unquote shut the hell up. So, you know, a bit of a lost act right now, but one that's very popular with the fans. The Randy Orton thing, you know, kind of threw everything for a loop. He's not around. You know, talk about his work tonight, Bruce, and, you know, what his place is in this Cody-less Raw world that we're now in.
In a sense, he's like Theory, in that there are out-of-the-ring issues that kind of mire everything about Riddle. But he is someone that definitely has a genuine connection with a lot of the crowd because of his act, because of how it brings a certain levity to some of the seriousness and hyperbole of professional wrestling, even if some of his stuff is hyperbolic in the same sense. I do think that for his future, him turning more serious and bringing out the comedy, if it's more about 65% seriousness and 35% comedy, whereas right now it's kind of the inverse, I think that's going to work out much better for him. But I also don't think they want him right now to be in that world title level as someone. So he's definitely going to be facing Roman Reigns this summer. But I don't think they want us to think of him yet as someone who's going to legitimately be the WWE Undisputed Universal, whatever the hell they're calling it right now. Because I think they still want us to have a journey with him, partly because he's been in the tag team for so long. Even though he's a former United States champion, he's been in a tag team now for so long and a tag team champion for so long. Generally, these acts go on a journey as a singles wrestler before they find success. Going back to Wesley, we're seeing that right now in NXT with him. So I think eventually his ceiling is that he is someone that they have pegged as a WWE or Universal or Undisputed Champion. Whether that happens sooner, you know, in a year or so or past that, I think it all comes down to this could really be the time frame where they're looking at how much can we trust Riddle as a singles wrestler. Because he's going out there and he's been having a lot of singles matches regardless throughout his career, but he's out there starting shows, or not starting shows necessarily, but anchoring certain parts of shows in terms of matches or in terms of being out there with promos. He's in there with high-profile feuds, Roman Reigns, the Usos. So for me, I know they're high on him. In the ring, he works a style that I tend to gravitate more toward, one that's a bit more realistic in terms of, because he comes from MMA, of course, so you have more grappling, more mat-based stuff. You have snug strikes. Those kind of things work well, and it's a different, even in WWE style with it, it's different from what you see with a lot of wrestlers. And, of course, the bare feet, he stands out with that. So, for me, his act right now is perfect for what they need him to do. There's definitely a lot more potential there for them to tap into, but I can see them having patience with him and waiting to unleash that once, you know, maybe Roman Reigns takes a long break after this reign is over, or maybe he leaves the company. Maybe Orton decides to go more along the Cena route and have a very restricted contract after the series of injuries he's had over the last couple of years. There's going to be a lot of spaces for them to insert Riddle to being one of the top one, two, or three baby faces or even heels in the company. And they're showing a lot of patience with him, which I think is the good call, because there's still all those issues outside the ring that people, the accusations and everything, and how his lawyer reacted, how he reacted, will hold that against him, as they rightly should. And for them to slow play it a bit, I think is a good idea, because all it takes is one sponsor, and next thing you know, you're gone. It sucks that it takes a sponsor, but that's how it works. So I think as long as Riddle doesn't do anything, doesn't piss off anybody who he shouldn't piss off, he'll be fine. And even if he loses the eventual match with Roman Reigns, he's going to come out looking well because of not only his skill, but Riddle is one of the best bump takers in WWE right now. So he's going to make Roman Reigns like 100% look like the legend that he is come whenever they have their match.
Yeah, you're right about that. Yeah, he's got that down, and that Reigns match, those skills will be on display. Bruce, thanks a bunch. Anything else in your notes tonight on tonight's show before we wrap things up?
It looks like MVP and Omos are now going to feud with the Dirty Dogs, who made a return that just happened to be at the very end of the match. They were still celebrating. It was a little odd there. But I did like the fact that they brought back the Mean Gene set for interviews there. So, hey,
yes.
They're switching things up. They're changing things up. They're trying different things. From In Your House on Saturday, they had a lot of video intros for the matches, or for the wrestlers as they entered for their matches, which is a different sort of thing they're trying out. It's always good when they try things out. A lot of times they don't work, but at least they're trying. At least they're trying to keep updated and draw in more viewers. And tonight was one of those things where having that what's old is new and what's new is old, but having that platform back was a really nice touch.
It was. They did it actually a few weeks ago, but then didn't do it for a handful of weeks. It probably is about over a month ago now where they brought that out. But we hadn't seen it again until tonight. And I think it's a nice touch too. I think it really changes up the look and feel of the show. I think it's a good switch. All right. Well, dude, we'll put a bow on it there. Thank you so much, Bruce. Thanks to all our callers. Thanks to our emailers. Really fun show tonight. Again, Wade will be on the VIP side of things later, running down tonight's show with his full analysis and full detail on the Wade Keller Hotline. pwtorch.com/govip is how you can give us a try. We've got a sale going on right now. So if there ever was a time, it's now. I'm PW Torch Assistant Editor Zach Haydorn. If you're a VIP member, you can catch my weekly audio show on the Canvas. It's a show that discusses the art of wrestling. Bruce has been on multiple times. And we kind of leave the type of discussion that we just had to the side and just hone in on the art of wrestling. Last week we did a preview show for Hell in a Cell. The week before that was a preview show for Double or Nothing. So this week we get back to our kind of regular cadence of picking a current event and diving in on the artistry of said event. So go VIP and check that out. Also, make sure you're heading to pwtorch.com on a regular basis for news, for columns, for show reports like Bruce's on Tuesday nights for NXT 2.0, hits and misses, my receipt columns and editorials every now and then. It's all there at pwtorch.com. Make it a part of your wrestling day. I think you'll be glad you did. And also check out our YouTube page. We just relaunched the YouTube page back in late March. Got some really fun stuff up there from Tyler Sage, from Robert. I've got a few things there as well. Would love the support there. So check out some of the videos, check out some of the content, hit subscribe, we certainly would appreciate it. And then follow the brand on Twitter, at PWTorch, and you can follow me on Twitter, at ZHaydornTorch. Bruce, one more time with your social media.
Sure, you can find me on Twitter at B_Lee253, and tomorrow night we'll be doing the post show for NXT, so catch me again there.
Very good, Bruce, man. Always a blast. I'm glad we got to connect, and hopefully let's not have so much time in between before we do it again.
Yeah, no, thank you so much. Always great talking with you, and a lot of good discussion topics tonight. So I'm glad that we were able to do this on what turned out to be a pretty momentous night for WWE.
Yeah, lots of news, that's for sure. Thank you, Bruce. Thanks to our listeners for listening. I'm Zach Haydorn. We'll catch you guys next time.